Hey, everybody, this is Brett, and before we get into the show today, which is probably not going to be that long, but it's a very important, very serious topic that I want to devote some time to, I want to do a little pre-show to take care of some housekeeping items that I think are very important. First of all, I want to say thank you to the people who are working behind the scenes on the new website and rebranding efforts of School Sucks Project. That would be Tony. He is the guy out in California helping me with the website. I shouldn't even say helping me. Like right now, he is doing all of the technical heavy lifting, and we're hoping that that can be done maybe sometime in April. It's going to be totally different than what you're looking at now. And Maciek, a name that I have been mispronouncing for almost 2 years. You might have heard me refer to this gentleman from Poland as Maciej, which is nowhere close to Maciek, what I just said. But you know me, when we get into Central and Eastern Europe, I look at a word and I say, ooh, I know exactly how that would be pronounced, and it's nowhere close. People have made YouTube videos about how bad my pronunciation of German words is. I should work on that. So apologies to Maciek for the mispronunciations of his name, and thank you so much for the work that you're doing. I also want to say thank you to Shannon in Illinois and Sherwin in British Columbia for their recent donations. And I also have a pretty impressive list of new subscribers. Claire in Montreal, Nicholas in Australia, Timothy in Georgia, Angus in Pennsylvania, Sarah in San Diego, and Sound Clash Recordings in Manhattan. Oh, and Antonia. How can I forget Antonia, who actually lives in Kew Gardens, New York, which is a place that I've been before, and I remember because of all of the air traffic in that area. Kew Gardens is out on Long Island, and it's like equidistant from JFK, International, and LaGuardia airports. So there are just all kinds of planes in that sky. All right, so I'm really grateful to the people who've signed up to be subscribers, looking for about, I don't know, maybe 100 more people to do that. We're a little over 50 right now, and it's great. It helps. But a lot of changes coming in the future that are going to raise the expenses and, of course, increase the time investment for doing this show. So please consider doing that. And like I said, you'll get access to what's going to probably be a pretty sweet bonus content section once the new website launches sometime in April. If you don't like that kind of commitment, there is another way that you can help the show. It involves our friends over at tragedyandhope.com. And this is a way that you can help School Sucks Project, Tragedy and Hope, and a guy named John Taylor Gatto all at the same time. And I encourage you to go to Tragedy and Hope and see how much media is produced there. And if you are a listener to the Liberty Radio Network, you will hear a lot of people speaking a similar language, but talking about a lot of the same things that you hear on Free Talk Live, Free Domain Radio, Complete Liberty Podcast, in a different way, a new way, an exciting way. And I really recommend going over there and seeing if any of that content is for you. But they produce a lot of very high quality content, and we are one of their affiliate shows. School Sucks Podcast is an affiliate show, and we are about to get a big favor from them. So here it is. We did this show about the Ultimate History Lesson, A Weekend with John Taylor Gatto. Rich came on. He's actually going to come back on. We recorded another show about a week ago doing an intro to the Logical Fallacy series. I might actually have two shows coming out of that. So that's three times you will have heard him recently. He was also on the show with Paul Verge and Jan Ervin about a year ago when they released their YouTube video, What You've Been Missing. The Ultimate History Lesson is this really comprehensive, really amazing. I've listened to about 4 hours of it. Very, very educational content. You're familiar with John Taylor Gatto's book, The Underground History of American Education. So this is a discussion that covers a lot of the same territory. And what they've done is they put together this thing called the Research Bonus Pack. It's like $140 value of the four-disc set, plus all kinds of bonus material, footnotes, references. They are going to offer it to listeners of these affiliate shows, School Sucks Podcast included, for $55. And if you pay that $55, 15 of that then is donated to me. A portion goes to tragedyandhope.com, well deserved, and a portion goes to John Taylor Gatto, again, well deserved. And this is something you can have a physical copy of this film. It's so much more effective a presentation if you've got somebody who's kind of on the fence about a lot of this stuff, and you say to them, hey, go watch this YouTube video. I don't think, even though I don't think that there's any like credibility problems with producing a video on YouTube, because that's what I do, And that's something that we're actually going to talk about today. But to be able to hand somebody a physical DVD and say, this is something you should really check out. And you should go look at what this, the, you know, the cover art. It's very, very professional presentation. But it could be a very, very effective tool to help persuade people into wanting to look at and then coming to a better understanding of the history, the corruption, the infiltration in American schooling. The coupon code is SchoolSucks. That's one word. You can find it at the very, very top. There's a banner at schoolsucksproject.com. There's a banner in every single one of the show notes since this offer became available. So we're talking like the last two or three shows. You can go to tragedyandhope.com to learn more. You can go to the ultimate history lesson to learn more about this. But you enter that coupon code, SchoolSucks, and you can have it for $55. 15 of that comes our way. And that is perfect timing as far as the things we're trying to do. So I encourage you to consider that as an option if you're looking to help me, Mr. Gatto, and the fine folks at tragedyandhope.com, because that is a major operation, and they produce a lot of very, very high quality media. So that's it. I hope that is helpful, and I hope you will cash in on that.
If you opened your email today, you may have seen the signs of something new in this 21st century world. Is it possible that the most powerful army today is not military, but a collection of celebrities, students, and ordinary people trying to transform human rights around the globe? Someone probably sent you the video shining a spotlight on a brutal warlord in Africa, Joseph Kony. It was posted on Monday, and as of this moment, it has been seen nearly 40 million times. Is this the new way to move the world to action? Here's ABC's Cecilia Vega.
It's a stunning YouTube sensation, a true phenomenon, a viral video with an unusual mission to bring down one of Africa's most ruthless warlords.
We are going to make Joseph Kony a household name.
Kony is the leader of the Lord's Resistance Army, which has terrorized Uganda, forcing thousands of girls to become sex slaves and young boys to kill. Behind the movie, a group called Invisible Children, the filmmaker waging his own war.
We want him captured and alive for the trial at the International Criminal Court. That's what we're asking for.
The film urged viewers to call, email, tweet 32 culture and policymakers, from George Clooney to Lady Gaga to Bill Clinton. The idea? To create a celebrity army to enlist even more supporters. And it worked. The video was posted on YouTube Monday. Then Tuesday, filmmakers say the Oprah effect kicked in. As she and other stars like Justin Bieber and Ryan Seacrest tweeted about it, the number of clicks skyrocketed, passing the 25 million mark yesterday, sweeping past 38 million today.
You guys have half an hour of your life. Just watch that video.
At 1.4% of all tweets were about Kony's crimes. It is quite simply a phenomenon.
One, two, three, four.
A few months ago, with very little fanfare, the administration announced that it was sending some special forces to Central Africa to help African troops target Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army. There's this remarkable viral video that you may have seen about who Joseph Kony is, and I was wondering if the administration was planning on talking about this video at all, responding, given that obviously we have troops in harm's way in, I think, four different countries in Africa. I guess the first question is, have you or the president, or has anybody in the White House seen this video? And the second question is, what's the status of our troops there in the war and the fight there?
I have not seen it. I'm aware of it and have been briefed on it. I don't know whether the president has, but certainly members of the broader national security staff are aware of it, and I'm sure some of them have seen it. I know they have. You know, as President Obama said, upon signing the Lord's Resistance Army Disarmament and Northern Uganda Recovery Act last October, we, quote, congratulate the hundreds of thousands of Americans who have mobilized to respond to this unique crisis of conscience. And I think that this viral video that you mentioned is part of that response, raising awareness about the horrific activities of the LRA. Consistent with the bipartisan legislation passed by our Congress in 2010, the United States continues to pursue a comprehensive, multifaceted strategy to help the governments and people of Central Africa in their efforts to end the threat posed by the LRA and reduce the human consequences of the LRA's atrocities.
In furtherance of the Congress's stated policy, I have authorized a small number of U.S. forces to deploy to Central Africa to provide assistance to regional forces that are working toward the removal of Joseph Kony from the battlefield. Sincerely, Barack Obama.
The surprise announcement came in a letter from the White House. The U.S. President's decision commits U.S. troops to help.
To advice and assistance, not putting Americans into combat, to help the countries of the region end this threat once and for all, then that was a worthwhile investment.
Suburban high school, where the weight room is modern, where all the kids are rich, and all the drugs are.
So today on the show, we're going to talk about this viral video called Kony 2012. And before we get into that, I'll set it up like this. I recently made a video called The American Way, and most of the people who listen to this show have probably seen that video at this point. And The American Way was recently posted to a website called disinfo.com, where a lot of new eyes are going to be on it. I can already see negative comments coming in and the little dislike meter on YouTube on its way up. So that's a good thing. That means we've reached beyond the choir, which was the goal for the video. And I expect that as it reaches a wider audience, more people will have more problems with it. I wanted to share a couple of comments that came in, and this relates to the Kony video, because when I was watching Kony 2012, there were some techniques used in this video that I found to be very offensive as far as the use of an emotional appeal and like some pretty heavy, pretty obvious propaganda techniques. Doesn't mean that I'm defending Joseph Kony, or I don't think that there are serious problems that need to be brought to people's attention all over Africa, but I started to question some of my techniques in making videos. Like, is this how I would present to people who are not familiar with these ideas or who want to find something wrong with the presentation or the thesis because they are just too uncomfortable with the ideas, or it just goes against everything they think? It made me really carefully consider. So I want to share a couple comments. This one appeared on YouTube. Okay, as per usual, libertarians poetically lay out the problem, then disappear when someone asks what the alternatives are. How will poor children learn? How will kids with religious parents find out about physics, history, and biology? Children can't defend themselves from parents who are hell-bent on keeping them ignorant. Are we to stand by idly and watch our neighbors doom their children to illiteracy and second-class citizenship? First of all, I want to point out, this is a 9-minute YouTube video meant to introduce an idea. It is not supposed to be the final word on an idea. That is not my intention with making any of these videos. But I think it's a valid point to say, well, where are the solutions? Because most people, the way we're educated, we think that solutions are kind of these prepackaged things that can just be inserted into any problem, and within a chapter, the problem can be solved. But what kind of a armchair douchebag would I be to just sit here, because I have a microphone and a podcast, and rip this Kony 2012 video apart without offering any kind of alternatives or solutions to what the video ultimately asserts as a solution? Which, spoiler alert, is the old magic bullet: government intervention in a problem. When I read this comment on YouTube, it kind of got me thinking, let me just find the part of it again. Are we to stand by idly and watch our neighbors doom their children to illiteracy and second-class citizenship? So maybe I'm being somewhat presumptuous here, but this is somebody who is saying, I don't stand by idly and allow this to happen. No, what I do is I support government education. Your video is a call to stand by idly. But I, a tax-paying government supporter, I am involved in the solution. And that's what I see in the success, ultimately, of this Kony 2012 reception. People who want to feel like they are part of the solution to a problem because they've raised all this awareness that ultimately results in government action. And oh, how I wish there was just a quick and easy, very convincing presentation that I could make that would reach 60 or 70 or 80 million people within a week. That said, if you care about a cause, if you want the world to be better, stop asking the government for help. Is this thing on? Stop asking the government for help. The filmmakers have, in this project, this Invisible Children charity, has assembled a list of policy makers that they want to try and get this message to. People who they feel are influential enough politically that they can make a difference. These people include George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and Mitt Romney. Okay, so George W. Bush and Bill Clinton are far worse war criminals than Joseph Kony. So this is just the handicapping of this government can solve problems kinds of thinking, where the Invisible Children charity wants to like pit war criminals against each other in some kind of like Rock'em Sock'em Robots game. Here at Invisible Children, we want to stop one war criminal in Africa by empowering and encouraging and enabling war criminals on our homeland. And folks, I have to tell you that part of this is so tragic, because if you watch this film and you see from the very beginning the relationship that this filmmaker, let's just take it as the truth. Let's just say we're being given an honest picture. The relationship that this filmmaker and the people close to him over the course of a decade built with some of these young people in Africa. Like, again, if you just take it at face value, it looks on the surface like this might be a very kind of heartwarming thing. Wouldn't it be tragic if all of this effort, all of this risk, all of these relationships that were built ultimately just went into a perpetuation of the status quo, a cross-continental collective affirmation of colonialism? Third world people are in trouble. Let's send some guns. Now, I think it must be incredibly frustrating for a young person to look at a situation like this. And that's who Invisible Children, by and large, has attracted. Young people. And this young person with a big heart sees a situation like this and they say, hey, something's got to change. Too bad, young person, that the last 12 years of your life were spent learning that you are impotent in that respect, and real meaningful change in the world starts with a letter to your congressman. And the real difference that you can make in the world is to pool yourself into a collective where together we will be able to beg loud enough for the government to hear us and take action that will ultimately force future generations into further debt, into less safety. That's what we'll do. Stefan Molyneux put out a great video this morning. I want to play you a clip of this. And he discusses in this segment of the video, I thought that as far as like what people can really expect, if you want to sit in front of your computer and you don't want to take the tremendous risks that are required to really intercede in this situation in Africa. And I've known people who went to Rwanda. In fact, I was invited to go to Rwanda to teach. I said, geez, you know, this was 3 or 4 years ago. That's not for me. That's not something that I'm looking to do. But there are things you can do to make a difference, and they might be small. and they might not seem as meaningful or as heroic as getting Barack Obama to hear you and then send money and guns someplace. Because, listen, if that's the feeling that you're interested in, of having that big of an impact on the world while you sit in front of your computer, go to your settings, set up that hyperspace screensaver where all the stars fly at you, and just pretend that you're exploring different galaxies for the future and furtherance of mankind. It's far less destructive than the fantasy that yelling for the government to send the military somewhere is a real solution to a problem. So Steph made this video, and I want to play you a clip, and then we'll pick it back up.
How do you even explain this? To ask the U.S. government to expand its power is not the height of activism. In fact, that is really just swimming with the stream, the bloody, wet, ugly, head-filled stream of state power. Hey, U.S. government, would you like to do more militarism? Would you like to sell some more weapons? Would you like to get some more jobs for the military-industrial complex? You would? Well, I guess I'm an activist now. No, the real challenge of activism is not to get the state to expand its power, but to get the state to contract its power. So, if you really want to help Africa, a couple of things you can do. Stop foreign aid. Foreign aid goes to the governments use the money from foreign aid to buy weapons from governments, largely the US, the English, and the Russian governments. So let's stop giving people money in order to have them buy weapons from our governments in order to repress their own people. Free subsidization of totalitarian evil does not help the people of Africa. So how about we stop with foreign aid, and how about we stop with arms sales to dictators? That would be something that I think would do a heck of a lot more good than having 100 guys standing around in the jungle picking their noses. Second, well, I guess third, if you count those two. A third, I would strongly suggest that if you want to help people in third world countries, how about you stop agricultural subsidies in the West? Because that produces a massive amount of goods that are dumped on third world markets, thus rendering the local farmers pretty damn useless in terms of providing food for their local population. So, that's not very good. Number four, how about telling the government to stop the war on drugs. The war on drugs combined with agricultural subsidies and the dumping of agricultural produce on third world countries means that these farmers turn from the production of goods which are healthy for people towards the production of goods that are healthy for people's delusions, hard drugs and so on. So these are things that would be a much more, I think, intelligent and productive thing to do if you wanted to help. See, people in the third world, they don't need our charity. They don't need our help. What they need is for us to stop arming their dictatorships, stop dumping food on their markets, stop killing their local economies. Here's number five. How about open up trade barriers? Pretty basic one in the U.S. Drop sugar subsidies and trade barriers on sugar. That would be a great way to help people in the third world. It's like we've got, one boot on the neck of Africa and the Africans, and we're sort of staring down at their twisted, pitiful, horrified faces and saying, how can we help you? To which the own response is, maybe get your boot off our fucking necks and we'll be fine.
But that's a lot of work. And a lot of time and a lot of courage. That would be at best just an incremental step to solving a vast problem that is hundreds, if not thousands, of years old. With invisible children, for like $3, and in 2 days, you can be wearing the same trendy bracelet as George Clooney, Justin Bieber, and Oprah Winfrey. And you also don't have to risk enemy combatant status by demanding the government stop doing something, because you can give them exactly what they want. Just demand that they do more somethings. So you see the challenge. Now, there's another dynamic to this story that I think is also worth exploring. There is very little mainstream media criticism of this Kony 2012 video. The most famous person that I've seen raise even an eyebrow is Piers Morgan, who's the host of a Larry King-style talk show on CNN. And most of the criticisms and most of the questions deal with the organization that made the film, Invisible Children, and the filmmaker's name is Jason Russell. All this criticism simply deals with the spending habits of the organization and that people have raised concerns that a relative, as far as charities are concerned, a relatively small portion of gross actually goes back to Africa. I don't really have a problem with this by itself because, you know, I think that the most important thing is not like, let's raise $8 million so I can have a sit down with Barack Obama and have him send military advisors. We all know where that goes, right? That's how Vietnam started, to send military advisors to this oil rich country called Uganda that we know nothing about, where a civil war has been going on for almost three decades. If that's what he just said in the film, that would be crap. But I think this filmmaker is relatively in touch with the power. That's what this whole film purports itself to be, a demonstration of the power of social media to raise awareness about a cause. An education that's effective in its presentation costs money. So do I have a problem with them making a film? Just message aside, intentions aside, techniques aside, do I have a problem with people raising money and using that money to make a film and also pay themselves a wage while making that film to raise awareness about a cause that they feel, let's just concede that they feel it's important? I don't really have an issue with that. I'm not doing something dramatically different. I think someone could just as easily level the same criticism at me, saying, Brett, you know, you ask people to subscribe to your show. How much of that money do you turn around and send into America's public schools? $0. And this organization has raised over $8 million, and they're saying that less than three of it has gone back into Africa. Now, I'm going to play you a clip of the filmmaker Jason Russell being interviewed coming up, and he can be pretty evasive on important questions. But I felt like he was relatively forthright. You know, he just said, this is a different kind of charity model. We need to raise money that allows us to create an educational campaign that brings more eyes and more minds and more hands to this issue. So that's not the issue for me. And there's also, while the mainstream media is almost silent when it comes to questions and criticisms, which I think is, that's not really suspicious, because like, how many viral videos asking people to rally around a cause has the mainstream media hardly ever mentioned? What I think suspicious is that there has been a little bit of mainstream media attention is. But this is kind of me pulling out my finest Reynolds Wrap hat at this point, and I don't want to quite go there yet. On the internet, on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and elsewhere, there's a lot of talk about Kony 2012 being a slick psyop, right? Where this is, it says at the beginning of the film, the next 27 minutes will be an experiment, you know, and this is to see if the government can find new channels of propaganda to convince people that war can be just, that war can be humanitarian. Uganda, I mean, once we get into the backstory, answering some of the 5W plus how questions, we'll see that there is a motive for the U.S. to have a military presence in Africa. This also includes kind of trying to head off China, who is trying to have more of a presence and influence in that area. And I've said on this show before that I think that is the entire impetus for the U.S. involvement in the Middle East. I learned this from Zbigniew Brzezinski, to have that queen at the other player's end of the chessboard, where we're talking about Iran, we're talking about India, we're talking about Russia, and we're talking about China. So, from a cold-hearted geostrategic point of view, putting the U.S. military into Africa makes perfect sense, all other considerations aside. But even if this is useful, this Kony 2012 is useful towards those ends, I have not found anything, and I have spent the last 24 hours searching. And if you have something, please let me know, because I will correct this, that shows this to be definitively a government-controlled, government-sponsored operation. I have not found such a smoking gun. Now, let's be clear. Am I highly, 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 highly suspicious of Kony 2012? That it is some kind of sophisticated new media psyop? Yes. Yes, I am. And there's a multitude of reasons for that. But at this point, that is not proven. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. But first and foremost, what I see most clearly is a group of people led by this guy, Jason Russell, who for a decade became very invested in a cause and have had trouble reevaluating the importance or the urgency of that cause and maybe trying to move on to something else. And that brings us to the next phase of this examination of the Coney 2012 film. Before we look at the film's assembly of arguments, and before we look at the film's presentation or call to action, we need to look at the backstory. In the first of two now previews to this logical fallacy series, I pointed out some logical fallacies used by Mitt Romney in his two-minute defense of the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. There are a few minor errors in my analysis of Mitt Romney, but what I found myself trying to do, because these Republican debates are such a shitstorm cyclone of rhetorical bumhumpery, I had to try to attach some kind of logical rule or violation of a logical rule to something that might not have been exactly circular reasoning or might not have been exactly equivocation, but that was just the closest thing that I could find to this nonsense. The reason, and I should have pointed this out in the show, the reason why Mitt Romney is able to get away with so much in these kinds of presentations is because he is assuming that people do not know definitions. You know, he is allowed to loosely define things however he pleases if it serves his arguments. So when it comes to Coney 2012, before we look at the logic, we are answering these questions: who, what, where, and when. And I think that after we do that, you will start to understand where a majority of my suspicion is coming from. But it's not just in what's avoided in the backstory of Coney 2012. It's more than that, but this is where we should start. Because you can watch the Coney 2012 film, and you can look at some of the propagandistic techniques used for making it, the appeal to emotion. It is so heavy. It is so obvious. If you know what you're looking for in this film, it just reeks of emotional manipulation. You know, the way children are used in the film, you will see why I have developed this belief, even though I'm just experimenting, I'm just investigating. And why am I experimenting? What inspired me to go this deep? And we're going to go kind of deep. We're not going to go all the way. This is a deep and dark rabbit hole, and I really feel like this whole show is just poking our head in. But why do I want to do that? Because this is something that I usually say, you know, with 9/11, what's the difference? What do we learn? That the government lies and kills people? But in this case, I think I have kind of a personal stake in this story, and I think you might too. I might be wrong, but I think you might, and it has to do with the use of the internet. At the beginning, I played a clip from a news piece. I don't know if that was Katie Couric or Diane Sawyer or whatever. But the anchor in that story asked what I thought was a very important question.
Is this the new way to move the world to action?
Well, that question, for me, leads to a few more questions. Whose way? Because all of the suspicion about the origins of this Coney 2012 film, who's really behind it, you know, while it has that kind of conspiratorial flavor to it, I think it's worth exploring. And like, we have a stake in how the internet is going to be used in the future. You know, like for the last 20 years, it's been great for the most part. But we all know that the internet is something that the government has wanted to get a lasso around since the mid-1990s, and we've seen all of these different incarnations of laws and, you know, proposed laws and bills to make that happen. And I think we also know that there might be all kinds of stuff like this out there already, everywhere. But I can't think of anything else that, if this is an example of that, has been so successful as far as the viral response. I mean, we see these things that I, 5 years ago, never would have worried about. I just had a copyright complaint filed against me by the University of Pennsylvania for a YouTube video that I'm, just a 2-minute YouTube video that I made about Stanley Milgram, where I used video stills from a film they produced about Stanley Milgram, like in the 70s. So that made it real for me, and I'm concerned about how the internet will be used in the future. And if you look at Kony 2012, it has all the right moves. Like, I was sucked in. In the beginning, I was sucked in because it was speaking the right language, you know? And I think if you watch it, you'll see what I mean. But I think these kinds of propaganda campaigns are in our future if that's what this was. Like, if this is not the first one, if this is not the first example, I think this kind of thing is going to become more prevalent in the future, and that concerns me, and I want to explore that. So back to that question in the news piece. Move the world to action. What do they mean by the world? Are we talking about a 7,000-mile-wide blue, brown, green, and white rock orbiting a medium-sized star 10,000 light-years away from the center of the galaxy? Or are we talking about the U.S. government? Because those two things are different. And if we're talking about the latter, we already know what the action is going to be. And this leads me to the second reason why I think this is important. Do you want to know enough? Like, this is a series about rhetorical trickery and the knowing or unknowing use of logical fallacies by people who want to be political controllers or at the very least opinion shapers. And that's what I saw in Kony 2012 as far as being able to spot the lies, the misinformation inspired me to do this deeper investigation. In other words, the first thing that we're exposed to with Kony 2012, and this might have been so obvious for you, so I'm sorry if this is like repetitive or unnecessary, but this might have been so obvious for you, but with Kony 2012, the first thing that we're exposed to is their rhetoric. And we say to ourselves, something smells like poop. And that is what leads us back to these prior steps. And in the upcoming shows, you're going to hear Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope, a guy named Tony Myers, who's also from Tragedy and Hope, and me, talk about the trivium, which is essentially the labeling of what is pretty much a natural process that a diligent and curious human mind goes through, an unmolested human mind goes through, to learn. And we have to go back from the rhetoric of Kony 2012 to get some things defined, because everything else is kind of like, oh, here, just, you know, take this as this, there's no questions about anything. So just look at our presentation and then do what we say. No, it's our awareness of this logical and rhetorical trickery that sends us back to look closer. Why is this important here? Because I think if you really care about an issue, and for everybody, you know, we have different issues that we care deeply about, but don't you want to make sure that the action you're ultimately inspired to take is not a perpetuation of the problem? And that might not be so much for you, but for other people. You know, like, can you share with them something very effective that's going to change their mind, or at least make them look a little closer or think a little deeper about what they're getting involved in here with Invisible Children and Kony 2012? So in this case, I think that it's worth going a little bit deeper. So here we go. Question number one, who is Joseph Kony? Well, this is the whole purpose of this film. Russell says in his narration that the goal is to make Kony famous during the year 2012. So much of the marketing campaign, the movie itself, and all of these promotional materials, the things they sell, designed to accomplish this, making Kony a household name. So, who is Joseph Kony? Well, most of the information that's presented in the film, I think, without absolute definitive proof, it would be very irresponsible, because this is somebody who is killing people, mutilating people, kidnapping children. Even if children think that they're going willingly into an army, they're having their lives, they're having their volition stolen from them. And it doesn't matter where in the world that's happening. So some criticisms that I've heard of this film that I really disagree with is like, oh, well, Kony's not even in Uganda anymore. Well, does he still have these children? Is he still enslaving and kidnapping children, turning them into soldiers and sex slaves? Because I don't think that, trust me, there are all kinds of problems with this. But I don't think saying, oh, well, this isn't really a problem for Uganda anymore, is any kind of effective argument against the film. There's other effective arguments, but I think that you have to acknowledge the fact that this is a serious problem if this is happening. And this is not exclusive to Kony and his organization. This is happening all over Africa. This happens all over the world. The people who would be sent over there as soldiers from the United States are victims too. So I think that that is an incredibly irresponsible criticism. If you don't like the proposed solution, to pretend the problem doesn't exist. We see this all the time in American politics. You know, a Republican or a Democrat will put forward a problem, and the problem might be real. The problem might be something they made up, but real problems exist, and, you know, government wants to get their hands all over those problems. So they'll say, well, here's a problem. You know, and the other side will say, ah, that's not even really a problem. You just made that up. There aren't really people suffering. Come on. That's very, very prevalent in talk radio, and it's incredibly irresponsible. So there is an urgency of wanting to free young children from that kind of life. I understand that. But the filmmaker is not painting a very clear and complete picture of Coney. And I think there's a reason for that. Now, I understand this is a half-hour film, right? I can't paint, just like I started out talking about my videos, because I cannot paint a clear picture of the history of American education in 9 minutes. And these commenters on YouTube, I'm sorry to go back to the American way for a minute, but like, this is a new experience for me. This was the other comment that I wanted to read. And actually, it was a couple of comments. People said that because of the techniques used to make this video, it looks like deliberate disinformation. Like, it looks like it was intended to discredit these ideas. Oh my gosh, my heart broke in half. I'm not even kidding. Like, hey, all I want is for people to go to my website and listen to my podcast and investigate these things and learn these things for themselves. It almost made me, for a minute, somewhat sympathetic to Jason Russell and Invisible Children with respect to this film. But then I remembered an important thing, an important defense of myself. My video has no call to action other than to think for yourself. Hey, here's some things that maybe you should take a little bit of a closer look at. Right? I think Invisible Children has a very clear call to action, and that is a big difference. But all I can do in a video, in a YouTube video, is a very rough sketch, and other people can add detail or color it on their own. So I understand that. But what I'm interested in is why so much, in the case of this Coney 2012 film, why so much context is omitted. At one point in the film, it says,
as if Coney's crimes aren't bad enough, he is not fighting for any cause, but only to maintain his power.
Now, I think there's two ways to look at this claim in the film. First of all, not fighting for any cause, but only to maintain his power. Geez, he could, that you just described just about every government in the world. And here we see the MacGuffinization of an important part of the plot. I'm using the word MacGuffin. I talked about this a long time ago, and I think in the episode about Christianity and the Kids Are Not Defective series. It's just a part of the plot that you're expected to take as a given, right? So it's a pre-packaged starting point, right? Where there's not, this package is sealed. There's nothing about this you can explore. Just like with Al-Qaeda, this is something that's evil. They do not have motives. There is no context to understand. Here is the evil package that we as good will fight. Something is missing there. It's not that Coney isn't evil. I believe that this is absolutely a horrific record, but there's more to the story. And Coney's organization, the Lord's Resistance Army, the name suggests that they're fighting for a cause, but that's kind of irresponsible of me to just assume that, because every person or organization fighting to increase or maintain their power claims to have some kind of virtuous intent. And I don't think Coney would be any different. But what's irresponsible about this in the film is I think he could have taken a minute to explain how a cause is used to get young people into or to get, you know, just to get support in general for what he's trying to do, even if Coney's rationale for his actions is not true. So many times on the show in the past, I pointed out how evil will be taken where it needs to go on the backs of good intentions. But similarly, and perhaps just as easily, a lie, a massive, hazardous lie, can reach its destination on the back of the truth. And I find it, at the very least, ironic that a film that fails to point this very important fact out about its villain is essentially using, well, the same technique.
It's hard to look back on some parts of human history, because when we heard about injustice, we cared, but we didn't know what to do. Too often, we did nothing. But if we're going to change that, we have to start somewhere. So we're starting here with Joseph Kony, because now we know what to do. Here it is. Ready? In order for Kony to be arrested this year, the Ugandan military has to find him. In order to find him, they need the technology and training to track him in the vast jungle. That's where the American advisors come in. But in order for the American advisors to be there, the U.S. government has to deploy them. They've done that. But if the government doesn't believe the people care about arresting Kony, the mission will be canceled. In order for the people to care, they have to know. And they will only know if Kony's name is everywhere.
Because I think what would have been an interesting dynamic to explore in this film is Joseph Kony is able to use virtuous intentions to bring people to supporting him. Now, I think this is important. I found an interview on BBC Two of Joseph Kony in 2006. It's 15 minutes long. I'm going to play it in its entirety because I think this is too sensitive a subject for me to take things out of context, for me to cut that interview up. So I want you to hear the whole thing. What might be difficult is that Kony's accent is very thick, and it might take a minute or two of listening to him talk before you can understand exactly what he's saying. I encourage you to listen closely, make your own decisions about his honesty, his sanity. I find both to be incredibly questionable. But what was not addressed in Kony 2012 is that this is a man who leads his followers to believe that there is some kind of noble goal behind what they're doing.
Good evening. Since the 1980s, Joseph Kony and his Lord's Resistance Army rebels had led a brutal insurgency in northern Uganda, killing and maiming civilians and abducting thousands of children. Some 2 million people have fled to camps which are patrolled by the Ugandan army. Joseph Kony is a man who's rarely seen and has never given an interview to a journalist until now. Most of the fighting has been in northern Uganda, where 10,000 people have been killed in the last 2 decades. The government of southern Sudan is now trying to arrange peace talks between the Ugandan president, Yoweri Museveni, and Joseph Kony, who's currently hiding in the jungle on the border of Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Sam Farmer traveled there for Newsnight. Some of the images in his film are disturbing.
Yeah, you remember what?
No. A group of young Ugandan men on a night out by the Nile in southern Sudan. They're in touch with the latest trends, aren't short of cash, and seem like any other guys their age. But they're not.
The peace is going to come with our country, to our country. God bless all peoples and all the world to know about that. Thank you.
But over the last 20 years, few have been that optimistic. These men are senior commanders in the Lord's Resistance Army, abducted as children more than 12 years ago, with little formal schooling. They've committed numerous atrocities, murders, kidnappings, and mutilations. And all in the name of their messianic leader, Joseph Kony.
Is Joseph Kony a god? Is he a god?
Not God. Not God, but he have a spirit.
How many spirits does he have?
Three.
Three spirits?
Yes.
He's like a prophet. He can see it. He can see things before they happen.
Yes.
It's impossible to kill Joseph Kony.
Yeah.
Even if I shot him here, would he right in the chest? Would he die?
No.
He cannot die?
No.
Joseph Kony's war with President Museveni's Ugandan government has seen more than 25,000 people killed and 2 million displaced. Everybody's affected. A third of all teenage boys in northern Uganda have been kidnapped by Kony's rebels. This is the aftermath of a battle between Ugandan forces and the LRA. Most of the dead are barely into their teens. The soldiers are obsessed with what the world says about them and their leader, Joseph Kony. To me, they seem complex characters. On the one hand, aggressive fighters trained to obey. And on the other, clearly damaged by years apart from their families.
They abducted some children from the school, including me. My mind was thinking of my people at home. And I said, why don't I really escape? I go home, I continue with my studies. I tried for several times. But it wasn't easy. They can punish you badly. They can cane you badly. And if you're unlucky, you may lose your life. So it's painful to talk about my family because I'm missing them.
It's taken me 8 months to get this far. 8 months of negotiations, promises, and disappointments. For the last 10 days, I've been waiting in Juba, the capital of southern Sudan, waiting for a phone call saying that I can meet Joseph Kony. Sunday was my contact and the LRA's man in Juba, abducted by Kony's men at the age of 7, and with no living relatives, the LRA are his family.
And are the plans doing well?
Yeah, doing well.
He's constantly on his satellite phone, trying to fix a meeting between Kony's fighters in the bush and Sudanese officials. Finally, some progress. We were summoned to see the vice president of southern Sudan. He also wanted to meet Kony. As we waited outside his office, our LRA minders were totally at ease.
Hello.
They're well known to Riek Machar, a former warlord and bush fighter.
Hello.
Hey.
Despite international criticism, Machar has given the LRA trucks of food and $20,000. He's leading the effort to broker an end to the conflict.
$20,000? Oh, they're going to buy arms. We are credible. What we do, we are transparent. Okay, thank you very much.
We were finally on our way. Dozens of Sudanese troops joined us on the journey to meet Kony. I was told he was just over the border in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The southern Sudanese vice president was optimistic about the meeting.
We believe we are making a breakthrough. We want a backup. We are the mediators, we are the facilitators. So we are moving forward. I understand yesterday even Mbeki also backed our position.
After a 40-minute flight, a convoy of 7 cars takes me on a journey to a still undisclosed meeting point. It's not long before we grind to a halt.
Driver, well in!
While the trucks were dug out, I seized an opportunity with the vice president.
The second time to meet Joseph Kony. What we're doing is an attempt to bring about peace in northern Uganda. If we can bring about a peaceful settlement to the conflict, the legal process can be done later. You cannot carry out the legal process in a situation where there is war.
After 2 days of traveling by road, a potential meeting place is found. We wait. And then, out of the jungle, Lord's Resistance Army soldiers.
I talk with him and tell him, come.
Their leader, Joseph Kony's number two, Vincent Oti.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, you see? Hi.
Okay. How are you?
Good. How many security would you want us to take?
Few.
So we can go?
Yeah.
So let's. SPLA remains behind.
As we walked through the bush, I finally believed I was going to meet Joseph Kony. And there he was, the man I'd been chasing for a year, the man who's eluded the Ugandan government for 20 years. Of the handful of images of Kony, the most famous is of a man in his 20s with dreadlocks. He's now in his 40s, but his hatred of the Ugandan president Yoweri Museveni hasn't changed.
You are the first journalist to come to me in the bush like this. So when me, I am here. You have now seen me. I'm a human being like you. I have eye, I have brain. I wear clothes also.
Describe yourself to me. Tell me who you are.
I'm a military position who is fighting in Uganda. I'm a freedom fighter who is fighting for freedom in Uganda. But I'm not a terrorist.
But the manner used to achieve these political aims has been horrific. Thousands of child fighters and civilians have been slaughtered, hacking off lips, ears, and limbs are just some of the methods used by this ruthless rebel group.
You have been accused of terrible crimes. You know, people having their ears cut off, people having their lips cut out.
Yes. That one is not true. That is propaganda which Museveni made.
I've seen the photos of people with no lips.
Yes, yes, yes. That is propaganda which Museveni made. Let me tell you clear. That thing was happened in Uganda. Museveni went in the village and he cut the ear of the people, telling to the people that thing was done by LRA, which is not true. I cannot cut the ear of my brother. I cannot kill the eye of my brother. I cannot kill my brother. That is not true.
Are you saying that the LRA have never been involved in any abductions, any mutilations, any rapes?
Yes.
They've never been involved?
LRA has never been involved on that part.
Most of Kony's fighters have been with him since childhood, since the time they were abducted from villages in northern Uganda. War is the only life they've known. Kony has been accused of kidnapping, indoctrination, and imprisoning tens of thousands of children in his army. While I was there, I didn't see any young children, but some told me they were 15.
I did not abduct anybody there. Some civilians, they are volunteer themselves to come and join me so that we stay together to protect their life, to defend themselves here. Do you think that the children can afford that condition of war? They will not. You see, that is propaganda which Museveni is playing. I don't have any children here.
But that's not the line he later takes with his troops. If I were president, all children would carry a gun, he tells them. To me, fighting is as normal as ironing a shirt.
8, 9, 10 provinces.
20 years of war have involved atrocities on both sides, the LRA and the Ugandan government.
Show me the place where we are now.
This is a different map.
In a war fought mainly in the bush, out of sight of cameras, the truth is hard to establish.
Not feel happy, definitely.
Riek Machar has taken on the role of bringing both sides together for peace talks. But as with previous attempts, it's going to be extremely complicated.
So we meet tomorrow. When they are
ready. I'm still unclear exactly what are your objectives. What are your aims? What are you really fighting for?
We want the people of Uganda to be free. We want the people of Uganda. Let me say it in short that we are fighting for democracy. We want people to be a total democracy, free. We should be free to elect our to select our lead to elect our leader. We want our leader to be elected leader, but not a movement. Like the man of Museveni. Sam, come. Come.
Let me film a little bit longer, a little bit longer.
As we ate together, it struck me that Africa's most wanted man, who's never been interviewed by a journalist, seemed guilt-free, more interested in the record of other war criminals.
I've seen here, the former president of Liberia.
Joseph Kony and four of his most senior commanders are the first people to have arrest warrants issued by the International Criminal Court.
So that you record where?
Kony alone is accused of 33 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity.
I'm not guilty. I'm not guilty. At this time, it is very difficult to do. But when we talk this peace talk, and that peace talk, when we talk and everything is finished well, we go. We go and talk.
Okay. We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay. We go and judge that case. To show that I'm not found guilty. Yes.
See, this is the emblem of the Lord's Resistance Army. In the middle of the heart is the Ten Commandments of God. We are fighting to defend the Ten Commandments of God because people are not following the Ten Commandments of God.
Kony is accused of controlling his forces with a mixture of distorted Christianity and brutality. Their ideology, they say, comes from the Bible.
Has God told you to fight this war?
No. It's not like that. God did not tell me to fight this war, no.
How many spirits speak to you?
Very many. I don't know the number. But they speak to me. They you know, we are guerrilla. We are rebel. We don't have medicine. But with the help of spirit, they will tell to us, you, Mr. Joseph, go and take this thing and that thing.
Joseph Kony has been elusive for so many years that he's achieved an almost mythical status, both among his supporters and his enemies. The fact that he allowed me to spend time with him may be significant. He may be preparing to come out of the jungle and engage in talks with the Ugandan government. But it wouldn't surprise me if he slipped back into the bush, never to be seen again.
After listening to this interview on the BBC, I went back to Kony 2012 and combed through the film, waiting to hear the narrator say one word. Resistance. As in the context of the Lord's Resistance Army. The abbreviation LRA is mentioned numerous times throughout the film. The word resistance is not mentioned once. For some reason, it is like the fried in KFC. It appears once in the film as text on a chart. There is no defending Joseph Kony. I think that goes without saying. But in this film, something has to be avoided. In other words, what is the truth? A powerful truth that Joseph Kony and his Lord's Resistance Army could use to perpetuate their lies. Questions 2, 3, and 4. Who is President Museveni? What is the Ugandan government? And what kind of relationship does it have with the government of the United States? So first, just a little montage to introduce, surprise, some conflicting points of view with the Kony 2012 film.
In order for Kony to be arrested this year, the Ugandan military has to find him. In order to find him, they need the technology and training to track him in the vast jungle.
Uganda is regarded as a model nation, and 52% of its budget is paid for by foreign aid. But thousands of the soldiers who fought to put Museveni in power were children. At the time, child soldiers were accepted as quite normal.
In Africa here, even by the age of 4, you learn how to fight. This is our tradition. If you don't know, fight with sticks, with spear, with arrows. That's the tradition. So if you are trying to think that this may disorient them psychologically and so on, that is not the case.
The surprise announcement came in a letter from the White House to Congress. It immediately raised a key question. Why is the U.S., which is already involved in two long wars, deploying troops now?
It goes back to one thing, oil. Let's remember, Uganda has oil. It changes the calculus always with U.S. foreign policy when it's a country that is seen to be rich with its resource that's become almost an addiction for the U.S. and the global economy.
In his letter, the president was quick to point out that the American forces would not be there in a combat role. He wrote, although the U.S. forces are combat equipped, they will only be providing information, advice, and assistance to partner nation forces, and they will not themselves engage LRA forces unless necessary for self-defense.
Now, I want to stop right there and just say that clip where somebody in Uganda is talking about the, how normal it is to use child soldiers, that's not, obviously, I think this goes without saying, but I just want to be extra clear, not any defense of saying like, oh, well, this is just normal in Africa. We have all kind of cultural, all kinds of cultural conventions in this country that are absolutely horrifying. That doesn't make them okay just because they're part of the culture. So what's important, though, to point out is that what's completely obscured in Kony 2012 is that the army that he's asking to help hunt down Kony does exactly the same things. That's what it said. The army that brought Museveni to power was composed of a lot of child soldiers. Moving on.
Washington is to send 100 special operations troops to Uganda to help local forces fight the Lord's Resistance Army, widely considered a terrorist organization. The Ugandan government has been fighting this guerrilla group for over two decades. But Asia Times correspondent Pepe Escobar says America has far-reaching plans for the region that have little to do with protecting civilians.
First of all, this is an exchange of gifts. President Obama is giving a gift to the dictator of Uganda, Museveni, who's been in power for 25 to 26 years. And he's as responsible of human rights infringements and, in fact, attacks on civilians and murderous attacks on civilians as Joseph Kony. So Obama is sending these 100 U.S. special forces, billed as advisors. So remember Vietnam in 1961-62. It started with a bunch of advisors going to Vietnam. This is a civil war, and it's an ethnic war. Once again, the U.S. is stepping right into the middle of an ethnic war that's been going on for over two decades. But the bigger picture is even more impressive, because this is not about Uganda itself. And even Obama admitted on the record already that these advisors are going to South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo as well. So when you look at that area in Central Africa and you see the amount of oil and the amount of mineral riches at play, and when we see that China is making inroads commercially in this area, and when we look at the Africans' agenda, which is to combat China commercially via a militarization of Africa, then you understand this 100, the beginning of many that will be going to Uganda soon.
So let's just start with an RT interview with war correspondent Keith Harmon Snow. Now, I fully understand that some of this might be a little bit alarming, a little bit jarring, perhaps even a little bit questionable.
We want to talk about some of the implications of the release of this video and do some reading between the lines with war correspondent Keith Harmon Snow. Hey there, Keith. Let's talk about this. 70 million viewers and counting. Kony 2012 is already the fastest growing social media video campaign we've ever seen. Your thoughts on this?
Well, this is absolute propaganda, Christine. Not only is it full of lies, it's simplistic, and it's directing the American public to support further military action in Africa, where we are already there.
You say that this film is full of lies. What is not true about the film?
For example, that Kony has 30,000 children in his army. This is not true. Over the last 26 years of Kony's military actions against the government of Uganda, there have been supposedly 30,000 children abducted. Who abducted them is not clear, because Museveni, the president of Uganda, is responsible for genocide in northern Uganda, and he needs Kony to be able to justify continuing U.S. support and military support and now sending in troops, which we've been doing for quite some time. So one of the lies in the film is that Kony is not supported by anyone. Kony has an office in Washington, D.C. The United States government has direct connections to Kony. If they wanted to get rid of this guy, they could get rid of him very quickly. Are you telling me that in 2012, we don't have the sophisticated satellite technology to track down a single African warlord in Africa? Nonsense. Look at Jonas Savimbi the guy we supported, the CIA supported for years in Angola. As soon as the United States wanted him gone, he was gone within a week because the United States had Israel send in special forces and eliminate Jonas Savimbi. So Kony is kept there to serve the interests of the United States and to serve the interests of the Ugandan government, because as long as they have a bogeyman to claim is creating these atrocities, Museveni can shed the blame for the genocide against 2 million Acholi people onto this guy, Joseph Kony, and he can always ask the United States and the Pentagon for more military hardware, more aid, which is converted to military hardware, and more troops, and that's exactly what they've done. They have no interest in finding Kony. If they wanted to eliminate him, they could eliminate him anytime. It's not about that. They need him. Kony has... Museveni, the president of Uganda, came to power between 1980 and 1986, backed by Israel, Britain, and the United States. Kony came from a woman named Joseph Lekwena. And no, I mean, these facts are not in the propaganda thing because it's too complicated. They say it's too complicated for the American public. But if you look at the history, Museveni created these death camps in Uganda, and the death camps had 2 million people in them. In order to justify herding the Acholi people into these death camps with a policy, a written policy for genocide against the Acholi people, Museveni had to have somebody to use as the bogeyman to claim that he was protecting these people from, and that was Joseph Kony.
But as far as this film, as far as this, as you say, propaganda film, this film put out and that has now been viewed by millions, by the group Invisible Children, what's really the problem with it? I mean, everyone that comes out with a film or a documentary has an agenda. They leave out facts and put emphasis on other facts to get their message across. Why is it dangerous that this has been seen by so many people?
Most people who see it couldn't even pinpoint Uganda on a map. Suddenly something, that's the nature of reactivity. Suddenly something has provoked them to take some action. So Invisible Children has sold out of all of their propaganda, all of their things that you can buy online. So it's a profit-making venture, first of all. Second, it's a bunch of white guys who don't know nothing about nothing.
Well, I mean, they know. I mean, I've met these guys. They're from my hometown, and they're, you know, very religious, and they do. They look like blonde surfer. They look like blonde surfer guys. They're very passionate about what they do, but when you say they know nothing about nothing, I mean, these guys have been over there. Do you think it's wrong that they've brought the issue to light for the American people, or are you just saying they're painting the picture falsely?
They know better. They're painting the picture falsely. That's how propaganda works. That's how journalists who are supposedly, you know, producing balanced articles work. It's an internal mechanism of self-censorship. Propaganda is essential to distill it down to a few simple facts. And in the case of this film, they're not even correct.
All right. No, we do appreciate your perspective. We think it's really important to get that out there. Certainly, if you turn on CNN or Fox today, there's definitely only one side. And that's why we wanted to have you on to kind of read between the lines for us. And we do appreciate it. War correspondent Keith Harmon Snow.
Now, some of you might be saying, Brett, if we're going to be rigorous, maybe you shouldn't be entering into this discussion as a source. A story from RT, Russia Today, a media organization sponsored by the Russian government, who would like nothing more than to prevent the United States from developing a stronghold in Africa and over the resources there. Well, I agree. This is a jumping off point. I want to introduce this Keith Harmon Snow. You might also be saying, Brett, he sounds like kind of a lefty. He is. You might also be saying, Brett, he sounds a little bit hysterical. He does. So now let's go back to another interview with Snow from November of 2011. And this is right after the news of Barack Obama's decision to deploy 100 military advisors to Uganda to help the government of Uganda track down Joseph Kony. Here we will get some more information that I think might explain why he is so emotional in his reaction to this Invisible Children film, Kony 2012.
Keith, the average, lay American may be watching this for the first time and may be compelled to try to move to some kind of action based on what they're seeing. And unfortunately, you know, with no point of reference, that moving towards action might lead them towards, you know, the Enough you know, Project or Save Darfur or one of these, you know, these, you know, Western so-called nonprofit organizations. You know, we've spoken about this on my radio show before with you. Can you tell our listeners why that's not the option to go, is to go to John Pendergrath and the Enough Project and Save Darfur, and why that's not the right route to go?
Unfortunately, the apartheid movement was co-opted, and the black people in this country, brown people in this country, people of color in this country know perfectly well, Native Americans in this country know perfectly well that COINTELPRO was an operation to attack the inner city and attack black communities and attack Native American reservations, the people that were asking for rights during the civil rights movement. And that has perpetuated itself or continued into the present in different forms. In order to co-opt the apartheid movement, you had to convince the American public what was going on in South Africa. First of all, there was something going on that needed to be addressed, and that was the incredible racism of the white supremacist government. And in order to co-opt the movement, it was infiltrated, and the message and the outcome of the movement were manipulated to such a degree that the American public believed that apartheid ended in Sudan, in South Africa, and technically it did. The system called apartheid ended, and they brought into power this guy, Nelson Mandela. But on another level, the apartheid couldn't be worse in South Africa at this very moment. Mm. The co-opting of the Congo resistance, the Congo struggle in the United States by the intelligence sector is profound, and this involves these various, not all, but various Congo coalition groups, and the Enough Project is a project of the Center for American Center for American Progress, was founded by John Podesta, the chief of staff of William Jefferson Clinton, who was in office at the time of the invasion of Rwanda and Congo. Involved in war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide, if we're going to talk about genocides. And the Center for American Progress has funded and created the Students Taking Action Against Genocide in Darfur, which is STAND. STAND chapters and Raise Hope for Congo, another group. These chapters have popped up all over American campuses. They're funded by the Center for American Progress, generally. Where the money comes from for the Center for American Progress is not transparent. We don't know where it's coming from. The International Crisis Group is an intelligence sector, deep intelligence sector, Pentagon-related organization, and they also are part of founding of the Enough Group. They're also funded by the Center for American Enterprise. So you've got Enough, you've got Raise Hope for Congo, you've got Save Darfur, the STAND movement, the One, O-N-E, the right. One movement, Bonds. The Resolve movement for Uganda. And all these films that are connected to all of these glossy brochures and all this hype and all these special panels about stopping genocide in the Congo by creating legislation that will eliminate the possibility of conflict minerals, that's all the co-opted movement for by the intelligence sector. If people want to do something to help the Congo, you got to separate yourself from the system of power. You got to stop paying taxes. You got to take some serious action. You can't sit in front of your TV and watch that woman down in Texas. What's her name? The black woman who's got this great show. That's Oprah. You can't watch Oprah, and who does a little expose on rape in the Congo, and then send $20 off to Oprah or send $500 off to Run for Congo's Women. These organizations are connected to covering up what's happening in the Congo. They're connected to covering up the American involvement. They're connected to covering up the corporate involvement. Mm-hmm. You got to figure out who's radical, meaning back to the roots, who's speaking the truth, and find organizations or ways that you can support it. First thing you could do is shut off the American media. If you're reading the New York Times, you're contributing to your own mental illness. Mm-hmm. If you're reading The Nation, you're contributing to your own mental illness in a different way. I mean, as Chomsky and Herman have said, there's a spectrum of allowed debate in America, and for the most part, you can find anything from Democracy Now! To The Nation, to Mother Jones, to The Progressive, to Harper's, to Atlantic Monthly, to The New Yorker. And sitting on a train reading The New Yorker, you know, that's fine. But just understand that you're being propagandized in a deep level.
Boy, next to that $3 Invisible Children bracelet that you can get in the mail, context might be starting to feel a little bit cold and prickly. These are two more excerpts from the same interview with Snow.
It's about you know, very simple psychological warfare against the American public, against the British public, against the Canadian public. It involves the Canadian government at the deepest levels. It involves the British government at the deepest levels. It involves the Pentagon and the State Department. In 1996, in April of 1996, Tony Lake, Bill Clinton's Secretary of State, had a meeting in Washington, D.C., where he sat down with Rwandan officials from the embassy and other State Department officials, and they had made the decision to attack and kill Rwandan refugees in Zaire, which began effectively, meaning openly. We saw it in the media beginning in September of 1996. It actually began with all kinds of preparation before that, but we're talking about American troops moving through Rwanda into the Congo, into Zaire, committing atrocities. The first major international war crime that occurred was the shelling of the refugee camps full of innocent, many, mostly Hutu people, but also some Tutsi people. And this entire operation, this illegal operation of mass atrocities, war crimes, committed by the United States with Israeli support, with British support, and led by, of course, the face of the thing was that it was this liberation struggle for the Congolese people to take out President Mobutu, who was our CIA agent for years, which is nonsense. There's nothing about that that's true. Paul Kagame, the current president in Rwanda, Yoweri Museveni, the current president in Uganda, these are the guys who led the invasion of Rwanda, backed by the Pentagon, backed by the Mossad, and began by exterminating, hunting down, shelling refugee camps, and then hunting down and massacring hundreds of thousands of innocent Rwandan people. All we're getting in the press is this psychological operation about Gaddafi the terrorist. Gaddafi the terrorist. So today, Bill Clinton saying that Gaddafi needs to be killed or eliminated one way or the other. I mean, this is terrorism, because Bill Clinton knew perfectly well that Rwanda was being, people were being massacred by the hundreds of thousands in Rwanda in April, May, June, July of 1994. We didn't stand around and do nothing. The United States invaded from Uganda, and of course, it began with the invasion of Uganda by Yoweri Museveni back in 1980, and at his side, he's the current president today, and at his side was Paul Kagame. So when they talk about, when Obama, President Obama says, I'm sending in 100 armed advisors to support the government of Yoweri Museveni against this rebel faction, the Lord's Resistance Army, I mean, wake up, people. This is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. The Lord's Resistance Army has been supported by Washington. It's a tool of Washington and the NATO powers to create a situation which can justify further military development, deployment, and you know, expansion in Uganda, through Uganda. The government of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, one of the most corrupt and governments on the planet, committed more atrocities than Idi Amin by orders of magnitude, because of the invasion of the Congo, the invasion of Rwanda by Museveni, the invasion of Somalia at present by Museveni, and Uganda in and backing the Sudan People's Liberation Army in South Sudan, and the Ugandan involvement in Darfur. All of these places, sites of atrocity, sites of war crimes, sites of massive killing that are written off by the American media as tribalism. That's the basics of what the politics of genocide is about. And my focus is most heavily on trying to show the nature of the propaganda system, which has covered up what really happened in Rwanda and is covering up the atrocities at this very moment in Rwanda, Uganda, Congo in particular, and Burundi. Those are the four big countries that I'm focused on. Of course, I've also done work on Sudan and Ethiopia to some degree, and it's clear that the same kinds of mechanisms hegemony is at work in places like Yemen, Pakistan, Libya, Iran, and Afghanistan.
Now, if you've made it this far, congratulations. You are part of the, 0.000, maybe 1% of people who will look this closely at this issue. Like Snow said, most of the people who viewed that film, and perhaps a lot of the people who took action, would have difficulty finding Uganda on a map. But if you're also still listening, you might be saying, Brett, what the hell is the point of this show? Where are we going? How deep into this hole do you want to go? Well, I think at this point, it's easy for us to see that even if I can't guarantee that all of the information presented so far is completely spotless, we can see the complexity of this issue. We can see the events of the world are organized and presented in a way that they are extraordinarily difficult for the average person to follow, for the average person to understand. So here we are, an hour into this show. And what we've done, what we've accomplished so far, is we've begun to establish a backstory. We've begun to establish some of the basic facts behind Kony 2012 regarding President Museveni, the Ugandan government, the relationship with the United States government, and the complexity and the intricacy of the intelligence relationships that are peripheral to that. Now, I pointed out just a minute ago that this is a quest on which almost no one will go. And that's why one of my major goals, the School Sucks podcast, was simplification. There are plenty of people out there. There's plenty of media out there that will give you complexity, that will give you detail and depth on any subject you wish to investigate. Snow is a good example of that. His work, you know, I might not agree with all of it, but I chose him to use as an example because I looked at a few of his articles. I found that they were incredibly well-referenced, well-sourced. I looked at his record. He has been a war correspondent since the 1990s, and I found that he was a credible source of information on these issues. A very independent journalist, even though he is, granted, and here's the caveat, he is part of the radical left, so at the end he might put together all of these facts that you will not hear anywhere else and push some other kind of conclusion that is not good stuff, but that doesn't change the facts. That doesn't discredit all of his research just because he might be pushing some kind of radical left conclusion at the end of it. I think that's important to point out. I mean, Chomsky is radical left. Zinn was radical left. It doesn't mean they never did important work that we could learn a lot from. Now, what I was saying before, Snow has time for depth. Snow has time to, he is in Africa and he's been there for 20 years. It's not something everybody can do. And this is kind of the whole purpose of where we're going next on School Sucks Podcast. I know you don't have time for this. Truth is, right now, I don't have time for this. And this is why the understanding of logic and rhetoric is so valuable. Because what's most important is that we know we're being lied to. We know we're being deceived. And we have very clear and very effective ways of illustrating to other people examples of them being deceived. We can show them things and point out the fallacies in a very clear and definitive way. We're going to talk about this on the upcoming show when we actually get to the intro to the Logical Fallacies series. These are just the previews. But since we're this far, we might as well spend some time on the next phase of analysis of Kony 2012, and that is the actual presentation, the logic, and the rhetoric of the film. Now, I started watching this film at this point a little over 3 days ago after it was brought to my attention by a listener. I immediately started watching the film really just intrigued by the viral response on YouTube. When I started watching it, I thought it was amazing. I said, what is this about? It opens with the saying, nothing is as powerful as an idea whose time has come. I'm in. Where are we going next? And I remember being pretty impressed with the opening of the film. And then we start meeting some folks.
My name is Jason Russell, and this is my son, Gavin. He loves jumping on the trampoline, being a ninja, and dancing.
What are you doing?
Making a snow angel.
How do you do that?
You do this.
And just like his dad, he likes being in movies.
Action.
Look out! Look out, people! It's a bomb!
and making movies.
Daddy, watch this. I think you got the video.
But he was born into a pretty complicated world. And as a dad, I want him to grow up in a better world than I did. And because of the course of events in my life, I see a way to get there. It has become my job.
Who are you to end a war? I'm here to tell you, who are you not to?
Hey, Gavin, what's up?
Years before Gavin was born, the course of my life was changed entirely by another boy.
And who's this right here?
Jacob.
Who's Jacob?
Jacob is our friend in Africa.
It's been almost 10 years since Jacob and I became friends. But when my friends and I first met him in Uganda, in Central Africa, it was in very different circumstances. He was running for his life.
You go to school here?
Yes.
Yes, that's how you know English so well.
I know.
Yeah. How many nights have you stayed here?
Hello. You are making our work very, very difficult. You stop that now.
The night I first met Jacob, he told me what he and other children in northern Uganda were living through.
We worried the rebels, when they raise us again, then they will kill us. My brother tried to escape. Then they killed using panga. They cut his neck.
Did you see it?
I saw.
We fear that if we sleep at our home, we can be abducted by the rebels. Because our home is far away from town.
They will catch us, then they will take us there in the bush. So come here to save our life.
If that happened one night in America, it would be on the cover of Newsweek.
What is it that you want to be when you grow up?
For me, I wanted to be lawyer, but no money. I don't have money to pay my school fees so that I learned and then I be lawyer.
After spending a few weeks with Jacob, he told me something I would never forget.
So it is better when you kill us. And if possible, you can kill us, you kill us. For us, we don't want now to stay. Because
you don't want to stay on Earth.
We are only two, no one taking care of us. We are not going to school. So
you would rather die than stay on Earth.
Yes.
Now, even now.
Even now. How is, are we going to stay in our future?
He told me more about his brother and what he would say to him if he were still alive.
I love you, but now I miss you. So it is better when we meet. We are going, even if we are not going to meet, but we may meet in heaven, you see. So it is better. I will not talk much. I will start something. Because if I see my brother once again, I don't.
Everything in my heart told me to do something. And so I made him a promise.
And we are also going to do everything that we can to stop them.
Yes.
Do you hear my words?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yes. We are. We're going to stop them. We're going to stop them.
I made that promise to Jacob, not knowing what it would mean, but now I do. Over the past 9 years, I have fought to fulfill it, and the fight has led me here, to this movie you're watching. Because that promise is not just about Jacob, or me, it's also about you. And this year, 2012, is the year that we can finally fulfill it. And if we succeed, we change the course of human history. But time is running out.
Now stop. At this point, we're about 10 minutes into the film, and I even skipped over what was, like I said before, a very effective introduction. How invested are you at this point in this story? And remember, we don't even know the purpose of the film. We don't even know what it's about. But we're about to find out.
To level with you, this movie expires on December 31st, 2012.
Okay, that's a little weird.
And its only purpose is to stop the rebel group, the LRA, and their leader, Joseph Kony. And I'm about to tell you exactly how we're going to do it.
Now, after this big, long suck-in, things changed for me. And the next phase of the presentation really started to turn my stomach a little bit. And we're going to get to that in a minute. But what we need to understand about this film, it is one long, continuous appeal to emotion. Even after listening to that intro, that is minus all of the visuals. It is also one continuous fallacy of omission, for reasons that we have covered in the last 80 minutes or so. But over the last couple days, as I started to look closer at the story of Uganda and at the story of Joseph Kony, what I saw in this organization, a deeply religious organization, we've learned that by now, Invisible Children, is a sort of dead-end desperation, which might explain a lot of their careless and dangerous omissions as far as the context of this story is concerned. It might explain their appeal to emotion constantly throughout this film as a sort of dead-end desperation. After all of this work, after all of this time, after all of this investment, emotional and otherwise, in this story, they had to feel like they had made some kind of a difference. Now, earlier in the show, I said that I didn't think it was a very valid or responsible argument to say that this doesn't matter because Joseph Kony is no longer in Uganda. But what I think is interesting is that this film is explicitly calling for military action in Uganda. And that is ultimately the big reveal. We're going to get to that in a few minutes. But if you're watching carefully during this introductory segment, this first 10 minutes, you will see that there are some very, very important omissions going on. What we learned too is that most of the footage used in Uganda was shot between 2003 and 2005. When they first stumble upon these camps and they first stumble upon this boy who becomes kind of a central figure in the film named Jacob. They pull up in a pickup truck to a bunch of people sleeping in what is barely an enclosure. And it appears to be in the middle of a jungle. And this is where he says, if this was going on in America, it would be on the cover of Newsweek. These were Museveni's camps. Concentration camps that these people were essentially forced into. And this is what the journalist Snow was talking about as a justification for Museveni's practices in Uganda. This is shown in the film, but never explained. Also, when he's first interviewing Jacob in this footage, that at this point is 9 years old, a man walks up, and it's in the film. It's subtitled in the film. He says, you are making our work here very difficult.
Hello. You are making our work here very difficult. You stop that now.
It is never, and I don't know, it is never explained who that man is or what he means. I think then he tells them to turn the camera off. And then that's the end of that footage. I think that it would be helpful to know what that was. But in this next phase of the presentation, I think in retrospect, it would call Jason Russell's care or concern for children into question when we see how in this film he uses his own child.
So the thing is, my son Gavin has never, I've never really explained to him what I do. He knows I work in Africa, but he doesn't know what the war's about or who Joseph Kony is. So I'm going to explain it to him for the first time today. That's what we're doing. So Gav, are you ready?
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you some questions.
Okay.
And you can just look at me and ask and answer the questions to me.
I'm kind of nervous.
What do I do for a job?
I stop the bad guys from being mean.
Who are the bad guys? Do you know where
Star Wars people.
Star Wars people?
Yeah.
Those are the bad guys?
Yeah.
Can I tell you the bad guy's name?
Yeah.
This is the guy, Joseph Kony.
He's the bad guy?
Yeah. Who's this?
Jacob.
Joseph Kony, he has an army, okay? And what he does is he takes children from their parents and he gives them a gun to shoot and he makes them shoot and kill other people.
But they're not going to do what he says because they're nice guys, right?
Yeah, they don't want to do what he says, but he forces them to do bad things. What do you think about that?
Sad.
I couldn't explain to Gavin the details of what Joseph Kony really does. Because the truth is, Kony abducts kids just like Gavin. For 26 years, Kony has been kidnapping children into his rebel group, the LRA. Turning the girls into sex slaves. And the boys into child soldiers. He makes them mutilate people's faces. And he forces them to kill their own parents. And this is not just a few children. It's been over 30,000 of them. And Jacob was one of those children. As if Kony's crimes aren't bad enough, he is not fighting for any cause, but only to maintain his power. He is not supported by anyone, and he has repeatedly used peace talks to rearm and murder again and again.
Kony, different times, proposed peace and then just regain strength and attack.
This is the head prosecutor for the International Criminal Court. In 2002, when the court was started, their job was to find and demand the arrest of the world's worst criminals. Although there are a lot of warlords, murderers, and dictators in the world, the perversity of Kony's crimes made him first on the court's list.
Kony is the first guy indicted by the SEC. But the crimes basically are these, are crimes against humanity and war crimes committed against the civilian population, including murder, sexual slavery, rapes, abductions. We need to plan how to arrest Kony. Start to plan and start to be serious. In fact, the only way to stop Kony is showing him, guy, we're going to arrest you.
What do you think we should do about it?
We should stop him.
The criminal here is Kony. Stop him and then solve all the problems.
We should stop who?
Him.
And at this point, I was out. Like I said, I was initially very invested emotionally in this film. I was very intrigued about where it was going. When I saw the use of this man's own child, not that this would be okay with anyone's child, but to use his own child in this manner, to me, I was sickened. And I was completely turned off. This kind of tactic turned me off to the message of the film. But apparently, I would be in the minority with that opinion. Just days after the film was released, the AP ran this story. Dad-son talk, comma, celebrity tweets, key to viral video. The dateline here is Kampala, Uganda, for some reason. A young American boy sums up what his father does for a living. You stop the bad guys from being mean. Yes, the father says, but who are the bad guys? The child thinks, then offers a guess. Star Wars people? Though half a world away from this preschooler's American upbringing, the truth is far more sinister. The bad guys are Joseph Kony and his Lord's Resistance Army, a brutal Central Africa militia that has kidnapped thousands of children and forced them to become sex slaves, fight as child soldiers, and kill family members during the 26-year campaign of terror. The father-son conversation is part of a 30-minute video that has rocketed through cyberspace since its release Monday on YouTube. It has been viewed more than 40 million times by late Thursday, propelled by celebrity tweets and fans on Facebook and Twitter, especially teens and young adults. The video's premise is that people here in America and the world beyond have the power to stop Kony, if only they are willing to spread the word through the power of social media. Called Kony 2012, the goal is to see Kony captured by the end of this year. Now, I want to pause for a second. This is something that I found suspicious because it is repeated over and over and over and over again in the film. And I thought it was weird right at the beginning, even when I didn't have the context that I do now, that he said this film expires at the end of 2012. The father, Jason Russell, is the co-founder of Invisible Children, an anti-LRA advocacy group, and the film's director. At one point in the film, he asks his son, Gavin, what he thinks should be done about Kony. Stop him, Gavin responds. Then in one of the video's many slick moments, the boy's words are quickly echoed by the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, where Kony is wanted for crimes against humanity. Stop him, Luis Moreno Ocampo says on camera. And that will solve all the problems, unquote. Despite an International Criminal Court arrest warrant and the deployment last fall of 100 special forces to four Central African countries to help advise in the fight against Kony, until now, few Americans knew who he was. And to those 99%, Russell poses this challenge. Make Kony and his crimes so famous that the governments view it as imperative that the mission to capture him succeeds. Celebrities and teens have quickly joined the cause. Even if it's 10 minutes, trust me, you need to know about this, tweeted Rihanna. This is not a joke. This is serious. Together, we can make a change and stop Kony. Help another kid in need. Justin Bieber tweeted. Have supported with money and voice and will not stop, tweeted Oprah. Data collected by YouTube show the video is most popular with boys and girls ages 13 to 17, as well as young men ages 18 to 24. Invisible Children's critics say the San Diego-based group oversimplifies a complex issue. In a rebuttal posted on its website, the group acknowledges the video overlooks many nuances, but says it sought to explain the conflict in an easily understandable format. It called the film a first entry point. It's something we can all agree on regardless of your political background, said Ben Kesey, the group's 28-year-old chief executive officer. There are few times where problems are black and white. There's lots of complicated stuff in the world, but Joseph Kony and what he's doing is black and white. The LRA began its attacks in Uganda in the 1980s when Kony sought to overthrow the government. Since being pushed out of Uganda several years ago, the militia has terrorized villages in Congo, Central African Republic, and South Sudan. Kony is a monster. He deserves to be prosecuted and hanged. Colonel Felix, I'm going to give this one a try, folks. Kulayige, spokesman for Uganda's military, told the Associated Press. Because of the intensified hunt for Kony, LRA forces, 1,000 strong, have diminished in number, splitting into smaller groups that can travel the jungle more easily. Experts estimate the militia now has 250 fighters. I'm going to stop there, and I just want to point out that without everything, I mean, this is an AP news story. People go here for information. Newspapers go to the AP to get the things that reporters take and turn into news stories that are then printed in newspapers. Most of the stories that you would read, like on the front page of a local newspaper, a regional newspaper, the Boston Globe. I mean, maybe, of course, larger newspapers like the New York Times, they have their own reporting staff all over the world. But a lot of newspapers and a lot of media outlets, and this includes television and radio, are just relying on what they're fed from the AP. In this story, without everything that we've gone through, now in the past, 80, 90 minutes, this all seems like a very passable argument from authority. We've got a guy who tried to overthrow a government. That's never good. We have quotes from the Ugandan military. And I'm not saying, again, this is no defense of Joseph Kony. But even the acknowledgement here that the story is a simplification in the AP shows how much of a buzz there already was by Thursday about the misinformation or the lack of information, the lack of context in this film. The ICC is another organization that's obviously very, very selective in who they wish to go after for crimes against humanity. Another authority used in the story. But I can't believe that in the headline, the article points out the use of this child for an emotional appeal. And it's part of the whole buildup of the first 10, 12 minutes of the film. But then there's nothing else about that. Now, I understand it's a news story. It's not a commentary. But there's plenty of opinion already in this by presenting, really one side of the story and then just acknowledging that there's criticism. This is turned into news articles by dozens, if not hundreds, if not thousands of media outlets. So there is no balance here. There's an acknowledgement that there's some questions, that there's some criticism, but no balance. Something else that I think is worth pointing out, the film about the plight of the Ugandan people contains only three brief interviews with people actually in Uganda. I'm pretty sure two of them are politicians. So I thought it also might be useful, as we're winding this down, to hear from some other people in that country. So first, this is Ishmael Bey. He's a former child soldier speaking on CNN International.
Well, first of all, I think it is incredible that this has gained a lot of attention. A lot of people have now know about the issue than before. You cannot deny that at all. But to have millions of well-meaning but uninformed and misleading people who think about this issue is not really something that can have the kind of policy shift that is needed to accomplish anything that's sustainable in Uganda or in that area. So for me, I think the whole thing has been uninformed and oversimplified advocacy that will not really do much at all.
I've got a tweet here tonight from somebody who says, I support the Stop Kony campaign, but make sure you know where Uganda is on a map before you start acting like you're its biggest supporter. These guys talked about Uganda being in Central Africa. When you see factual inaccuracies like that, Ishmael, you know, what does it make you feel? How does it make you feel? Does it make you feel there are these white Westerners sort of getting on a bandwagon and actually they haven't got a clue what they're talking about?
Well, I've been tweeting about this, and one of the questions I've been asking is that this approach, it does not respect the dignity of people who are coming from this experience, who have suffered through this. And it does not, as you mentioned, you know, it's not correct at all. And also, if you look at, there's a young blogger called Rosbella Kagwemba who've been talking about this from Uganda, talking about that the war in Uganda is not just about one man, it's not about Kony, it's about the marginalization of the North. That if you want to become a change maker in this world that we live in, you got to be willing to deep into the complexities, the geography and histories of the places you're interested in making a change. You don't want to be handed it to you just as because it's cool. Mm. So therefore, war is not cool. As Jason Ross mentioned it, you have to find a cool way. War is nothing cool. If you're not interested in the geographies and the complexity of it, to know that it's not black and white, to delve into that the fact that you can't glamorize this stuff, then I think you have no business in being a change maker. It's not an easy thing that you can do. Feel good about it today, and then tomorrow you forget about it.
And this is the Ugandan blogger mentioned by Ishmael, Rosebel Kagumir.
Hi, my name is Rosebel Kagumir, and I am a blogger from Uganda. So today we have been talking about the story of Joseph Kony that has been trending on Twitter. I first saw this story from friends' links on Facebook, and I was like, you know, this is a new issue out on Kony. I need to update myself on what is going on. So the first 5 minutes of the video, I was trying to figure out what is this video about. I could not even have the slightest idea that it would be about Joseph Kony. So basically, my major problem with this video is that it simplifies the story of millions of people in northern Uganda and makes out a narrative that is often heard about Africa, about, you know, how hopeless people are in terms of conflict, that only people of this continent can help. Yet it's not entirely true. There are local initiatives. There have been local initiatives to end this war. We know people famous like Betty Bigombe. This woman is a great woman who went into the bush and tried to convince Joseph Kony to come out. And she tried because the war was more than just an evil man killing children. The war is much more complex than just one man called Joseph Kony. And it was much more in the beginning about resources and about marginalization of people in northern Uganda. So, but we have got to the stage where the war is about an indicted leader of a group. But even still, we still have actors in this war that have committed crimes. That these are certain issues that need to be told when you're telling a story of a war and trying to end it. The other problem was that he plays so much on the idea that this war has been going on because millions of Americans or in the Western world, people have been ignorant about it. Yet it is not entirely true. And there have been certain steps made towards ending the war. Right now, Joseph Kony is not in Uganda. The situation in the video was 5-6 years ago. The situation has tremendously improved in northern Uganda. People sleep at home and people are back home. Children are going to school. And it's about post-conflict recovery right now. And we don't see those issues of now, what needs to be done, especially when he puts Uganda at the center of this conflict. We need to see the situation that is currently on the ground, which I don't see in the video. And as many people have raised, this is another video where I see an outsider trying to be a hero rescuing African children. We have seen these stories a lot in Ethiopia, celebrities coming in Somalia. You know, it does not end the problem. I think we need to have kind of sound, intelligent campaigns that are geared towards really real policy shifts rather than a very sensationalized story that is out to make just one person cry and at the end of the day we forget about it. I think it's all about trying to make a difference, but how do you tell the story of Africans is much more important on what the story is actually. Because if you're showing me as voiceless, as hopeless, you have no space telling my story. You shouldn't be telling my story if you don't believe that I also have the power to change what is going on. And this video seems to say that the power lies in America, and it does not lie with my government. It does not lie with local initiatives on the ground. That aspect is lacking, and this is the problem. It is furthering that narrative about Africans totally unable to help themselves and needing outside help all the time. And don't get me wrong, Joseph Kony is a very is a wanted man. He has been indicted and he has committed so many crimes, and he should be brought to book. But how do we go about it? We have to see governments of South Sudan, governments of South Sudan, DRC, Uganda, Central African Republic, paying more commitment, because ultimately these are the governments that will bring this war to an end, and also pledging much more to greater efforts of reconciling communities. That's why I said the war is not just about Joseph Kony. Solving this war is about pacifying the region, making sure communities do not go back to rebellion, making sure you stop a rebellion before it starts. And as far as I'm concerned, this video basically tries to bring one man, it's one bad guy against good guys and against we, the mighty West, trying to save Africa. So I have a problem with that, because this is the same narrative we have seen about Africa for centuries. And in this 21st century, we ought to see something more different. And I don't doubt his intentions. Maybe his intentions are good, but how he goes about it, I will not agree with that. And I think there are people doing great initiatives on the ground, even before he went there. I covered this while I was in the northern Uganda in 2005. I saw that kind of suffering he's talking about. But yet, we do not think that this story can be told in that simple way, just to say it's about a good guy and a bad guy. Yes, they are bad guys. Yes, we need to end the war. But how we tell this story of children, trying to give these children a voice, trying to give elders who have contributed to peace in the region a voice, to also voice their concerns, question even the involvement. As far as I know, the involvement of America has been questioned. Why is America in? And it's important that these discussions are captured if you're genuinely trying to end a war and make sure that another rebellion does not begin. Thank you.
Now, while I think that this is some important additional information to hear these voices of people who understand the situation in Uganda and want to tell the story with a few more layers and a lot more context than Kony 2012, the film, it's important to point out that the second person we heard from, the blogger Rosabel, seems to be entertaining a lot of the same fantasies about the efficacy and goodness of her government, the Museveni government in Uganda, that people entertain here in the West, and that we certainly see in the Kony 2012 film. But I read through her blog, and I didn't see anything, and I wasn't... I was thorough in a lot of places on this show, but this was one place where I just read through, and I don't see any evidence that she's some kind of, state press agent that's, doing the work of the Museveni administration. But what caused me to look into that, what made me think that, this person might be worth a 5 or 10 minute investigation, it was one phrase in particular that I found kind of concerning.
Solving this war is about pacifying the region, making sure communities do not go back to rebellion, making sure you stop a rebellion before it starts.
What is clear is that the Kony 2012 film, according to what I saw through the Ugandan press, is 10 years too late as far as dealing with this conflict is concerned, and that was one of the reasons that led me to believe the invisible children people are these dead enders who are just trying to hold on to a cause and, try to make some meaning out of all of this effort and this risky work. I'll give them that they did over the course of the last decade. But the story is incredibly oversimplified. And because of that oversimplification in the way the story is told, and the appeal to emotion and the ever-present fallacy of omission, as far as what's missing, it makes this very suspicious. And two other fallacies that are woven throughout this entire presentation and certainly delivered at the end, the irrelevant conclusion. I talked about this a while ago in the Teachers Union series. And really, the entire film, especially its ultimate conclusion, serves as an example of this. Maybe this is why we don't know what it's about for the first 10 minutes, which is more of a use of an emotional appeal. But the irrelevant conclusion is where somebody works to provide all of this evidence towards some kind of conclusion that at this point you're obviously going to agree with. But then at the very end, they yank the conclusion they've been proving out from underneath the argument and slide another conclusion in. And the argumentation in this film is about this evil man, Joseph Kony. And Joseph Kony is a bad guy, right? But at the end, what's the ultimate conclusion? U.S. military intervention in Uganda. And we also see the filmmakers push a hasty generalization. Hasty generalization we talked about before. This is when a person draws a conclusion about something, a group of people or whatever, based on a sample that is not large enough to draw such a conclusion, such a definitive conclusion. So what is put forward in Kony 2012 by the filmmaker Joseph Russell is that they are laying out a model. These are people who have been focused on one area of one country, tracking one man. But this will serve as a model for how to bring justice to the world, for how to eventually stop all crimes against humanity. And we can see the consequences of this kind of reasoning. Because ultimately, what's the formula? What's the action plan? Well, we're going to take all of this grassroots naivete, and we are going to ask one government that has committed war crimes to help another government that has committed genocide to track down one man who has committed crimes against humanity. Okay. That being said, I think that the only fair conclusion for me to make at this point with the information that I've gathered, and if you have something new, please let me know. Or, you know, if you have done some work on this somewhere else, I will certainly direct my audience to you. But all that I think is fair for me to conclude at this point is that Invisible Children and organizations like it that attract mostly young people who want to spring into action on some kind of issue where they lack very, very important foundational background knowledge have made themselves into what is sometimes referred to as useful idiots in furtherance of what is about to become possibly a very public new, even though it is not new, it is not even remotely new, but it might be new to public attention, United States foreign policy agenda in the continent of Africa. So at this point, I've worked on this show for about 4 days, a majority of that time spent researching this issue. And you will find in these cases that you walk into a room called Uganda. That room has four doors. You open all four of those doors. All of those rooms have three more doors, and so on and so on and so forth. I know that this is not something that most people have the time to do on every single issue that is thrown at us, either online or through the mainstream media or in school or what comes at us in society. Like if you're on a college campus and there's this big rally around a group like Enough or Invisible Children. This is a lot of work. This is a lot of work for a person to do when they already have probably a pretty busy life. I certainly understand that we can't all be researchers and investigative reporters. Right now, that's reality. And trust me, there's a lot of things that I care about that I wish I knew a lot more about. But, you know, time is a factor in all that. So we can't all do this, but you know what? It's a good thing that some people do. Because if you look at the momentum, you know, if you look at what is happening online, if you look at all of the time and effort and resources that go into controlling how people think and what they ultimately do, you know, where would we be if people were not doing this investigative work? And I think that what showed up as far as Kony 2012, as far as the fallout, as far as the criticism, as far as the questions, is a fine, fine example of the leveling of the playing field, for lack of a better expression. Today, to see people have such a rapid response, the, you know, the Kony video aside, because I don't think we proved anything as far as like its origins. Like, is it some kind of intelligence project? but how rapid the response is to the propaganda that is pumped out by the mainstream media, that is pumped out of government press releases. It makes me, optimistic. But like I said before, the most important thing is to be able to spot the lie. You can trust other people to do research for you if they are following a method, if their arguments are sound. And I remember hearing Rush Limbaugh say one time, oh, my audience doesn't have to think. I do the thinking for them. That's not good. But because we don't have the time to look with such depth into every issue that we might care about, it is okay to trust people if they follow a method. And learning that method, I think, is very important. If you have any problems with anything that I've presented here today, please tell me. I really appreciated a criticism I received of the show on Mitt Romney, and I will correct those things as the series goes on. There's another reason why I wanted to spend so much time on this issue, considering the viral impact of this video and this campaign. Over the last few months online, I've watched many websites disappear, and in their place, there's just this FBI anti-piracy warning. The changes in Google's privacy policies, some of the realities that I think people should start looking at when it comes to Facebook. And I'm really concerned about the internet turning into the next, despite what it's been for the last two decades, I'm really concerned about over the next year or several years, the internet turning into essentially what cable television or talk radio or, a lot of these print media outlets are today, which is nothing more than tools of manipulation and public opinion shaping and preparing public opinion and tricking people into thinking that they actually support the agendas of those in power. And just like those other examples of media that at one time were far more free than they are today, that's what the internet will be if it comes under the control of the government. And I think we already know, we can already see that the efforts towards that end are well underway. And of course, today the internet is a place where you can go on a website and learn that the earth is hollow. And in fact, reptilian beings live inside, and once in a while they fly out in UFOs and put on skin suits and control the world's banks. But it's also a place where you can learn information literacy, so you don't have to worry about those reptilian banker types so much. This goes without saying. So I hope this was helpful. I look forward to your comments or your criticisms. And why don't we wrap up today with a brief interview with Jason Russell, and we can hear his rhetorical skills in action as he responds to criticism about his tactics and his mission with Kony 2012. Thank you for listening, and take care. Your driveway is extra long.
And this one critic says, your money supports, the money supports the Ugandan government's army and various other military forces. Is that true? Are you going to be able to take him out or have him arrested? And how are you going to do that without appearing as though you're doing the same thing that Kony is?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. We put a man on the moon many, many years ago. A man on the moon. So getting a warlord to stop abducting children, it is difficult. I'm not saying it's simple, but I am saying it is doable. So the thing is, our resources that we have, the Department of Defense and the intelligence we have, we can strategically make it happen with the Ugandan military forces that are on the ground. It is a collective effort. It is not just in isolation. We don't want America to be the world police. We don't like war. We want to end war. That's what we're doing. I'm a pacifist at heart. I love Gandhi, Dr. Martin Luther King. Those are my idols. Suburban Heights.
suburban high school.